Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders Fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Terry Rowan, and I am welcoming you to tonight's edition of Patriot Education, brought to you, as always, through the good offices of our friends at www.patriotfamilies.com, a great group of people who truly do believe that we are the nation. One of our dear friends who worked so hard for the Patriot cause, Yolanda, is ill at home tonight, and I'm asking all of you who are listening, and I know all my friends in the chat room, will keep her in your prayers. We can't do without our Yo. She works so hard and keeps us all informed. She is a pearl among women. Tonight's topic, ladies and gentlemen, is a quotation from Governor Chris Christie's speech at the Republican National Convention on Tuesday evening. During his speech, Governor Christie said something that struck a chord with me. He said, "We do not believe in teachers' unions. We believe in teachers." I heartily endorse that view. And I believe that view is shared by every conservative out there. Our teachers are fueling tomorrow. Their job, their profession, their career, their passion is to give to our children the tools and skills they will need to be informed, concerned, and productive citizens. They are being treated as villains when they should be given accolades as heroes. I know of only one other group that is asked to do the impossible as often as our teachers, and that is our brave troops all over the world. Our military is given restrictive rules of engagement. We have a president who does not back them up and who tells the soldier or the Marine or the sailor who hands the flag of a dead warrior to his loved ones to say now the Secretary of Defense wishes to express his gratitude for your loved one's sacrifice. Not the President of the United States, ladies and gentlemen, but the Secretary of Defense. Our troops are basically having their families here that the Secretary of Defense is sorry they're dead, but the President doesn't give a damn. This attitude, this belief, this ideology that runs through the teaching profession in the liberal colleges by liberal professors and from the Oval Office and the Senate and the minority leader in the House is devastating. Not only does our president disrespect the men and women who offer up their lives for us, the only ear he has tuned to one of the most important things we do for our children is pointed directly in the direction of the teachers' unions and listens only to people who are more concerned about bloated retirement plans on state dollars than they are on educating our children. The idea of public employees having unions is ridiculous on the face of it. How many businesses do you know where the employees are paying a salary and also negotiating with them on theirs? It makes no sense. The very people who decide on what teachers' unions get are the people who are receiving huge contributions from the unions themselves and counting on the quote-unquote organized labor vote to keep them in the citadels of power so they can screw us over and over and over again. And pardon me for using a rather crude expression, but that's basically what they're doing. I have been watching the speeches at the Republican National Convention this week, as you can tell by the lead-in for tonight's topic. I have been very impressed with the number of people who have stood up at that podium and have told their stories that they became a success not because somebody gave them something from the government, but because they and their parents and grandparents believed in the idea that opportunity was the greatest thing about America. Not a guaranteed outcome, not an entitlement victim population, but opportunity. Shot to try. Our teachers are being adjudicated on their ability to create equal outcomes and not equal opportunity. The progressive ideology permeated teaching long before it became majority in both houses prior to 2010. That progressive ideology began with the creation of the Department of Education under Jimmy Carter. The assumption that the progressive utopia could be achieved if we just got our kids brainwashed early enough in public institutions. Every single one of the folks who spoke at the convention that I heard, from Republican governors like Kasich and Christie and Martinez and Nikki Haley, to our vice presidential candidate, Paul Ryan, reiterated in this nation, the opportunity for success is the American dream. Susana Martinez even said it in Spanish. El sueño americano es el éxito. The American dream is success. It's not what can I get from the government and who's going to feed, clothe, and house me while I sit on my butt and watch television. That has never been the American dream. But we have been teaching our children that everybody gets a trophy. Nobody should have less stuff in their house than somebody else. Nobody will ever be mean to you. Everybody will always love you. The world will be to suit your particular needs, your particular desires, your particular learning style. Condoleezza Rice last night mentioned the fact that K through 12 education is a dismal failure. I was thrilled to hear her tell the truth. That woman is an amazing person. Her anecdote, her statement that a little girl from Jim Crow land in Birmingham, even though she couldn't go to McDonald's for hamburger or her parents couldn't take her a movie, her parents told her she could be anything, everything she wanted to be, including President of the United States. And here she is, a former Secretary of State. That is the American dream. That is what we need to teach our children. And we need to free our teachers so they can do it. We need to stop telling them that they're going to be measured by how many A's in their classroom. We need to stop teaching them that if a kid doesn't want to learn, acts like a jerk, doesn't do his homework, and skips school three quarters of the time, it's their fault that he isn't passing. We need to bring back common sense in education as well as in our economy, our housing market, the way we deal with our military, the entire spectrum of the American lifestyle that this president, his cronies in business, and his sheepdogs in the Senate and Congress have foisted upon us. Watching the Republican convention, for me, was a very pleasurable activity. I am not normally particularly interested in rah-rah speeches. Generally, they leave me kind of cold because you expect when somebody's trying to get elected or trying to get you to buy something or trying to get you to choose them to do something they want to do, there's always, I'll say what they want to hear. That was not the case with most of the speakers I've listened to over this convention time. Chris Christie was very straightforward. He told it like it is, that this is not going to be easy, that we are in a deep hole, and everybody is probably not going to be as comfortable as they used to be when we thought we were at the top of the heap economically. And he was right to do so. The feel-good gobbledygook that our current president has been basically smothering us with for 3.5 years now is pablum. It's a pacifier. Stick it in our mouth, tell us to suck on it, and maybe we'll stop thinking. We need people like Chris Christie. We need people like Paul Ryan. God bless him. My friend Linda in the chat room is quoting his comment that the college grads sitting in the room in their parents' house they had as kids, staring at the ceiling covered with faded Obama posters and wondering when they're going to be able to get out of there and start a real life. This is not the American dream, ladies and gentlemen. Their parents didn't send them to college to come home and sleep, eat nachos, play video games, and watch television until they were no longer covered on their parents' health insurance. Our current political leaders, and there are some in both parties, not just the Democratic Party, are determined to keep us at a stage of an 11-year-old, where we look to mommy state and daddy state to do all the hard things for us, and we get a trophy just for showing up, and somebody tucks us in at night and gives us our little pacifier and makes sure the bottle was warm enough and pats us on the head and says, that's all right, honey. You'll never really have to face anything that's a risk, or you'll never have to fail because mommy state, daddy state will take care of you. What is appropriate for an 11-year-old from his or her parents is not appropriate from a leader of the free world to his or her citizens. The citizens who voted for Barack Obama in 2008 are beginning to wake up. They're beginning to see they don't like being treated as if they were 11 years old. They're beginning to go to see things like the movie 2016, which my friend Bill told me he had seen, and it was great, and he heard a lot of people coming out of it saying, Obama again, ever. Because, from my understanding, although I have not yet seen the movie, Dinesh D'Souza does a brilliant job of exposing the roots of the ideology that is ruling our Oval Office and our Senate today. More and more and more people are waking up, and they're finding out that truth may be a touch bitter, but like a cup of black coffee, it sure as hell wakes you up. And if we do not have an awake and alert and thinking electorate, ladies and gentlemen, we will no longer have our country. And we can start with looking at what is going on with our teachers in our schools. We can look at the disgrace of the rubber rooms in New York. We can look at the teachers' unions fighting tooth and nail against places like Carpe Diem, a preparatory middle and high school in Arizona that uses technology to attract and educate the children who attend, not in a traditional classroom, not in a everybody gets a trophy, not in a, gee, don't we feel good about ourselves when we spell cat PFW because the P looks so pretty. The teachers' unions fight concepts like this because it doesn't take as many of them to teach children. It frees teachers from the bureaucratic hudishwa, another name for bucolic byproduct, that they spend 90% of their non-standing in front of the class time doing with filling out paperwork, doing lesson plans, and all of the other nitpicking nonsense that goes on. I attended a meeting at my middle school on Monday. Monday was our convocation day, which we have every year. We didn't last year because a hurricane and a bunch of floods and an earthquake kind of interrupted them just a little bit, and we had to start school late. But in the afternoon, after the gathering of all the employees of all the schools in my county, we went to our individual schools and had a big, long afternoon meeting with our principals over what was going to be different, what was going to be the same, any changes, et cetera, et cetera. And in that meeting, all of the teachers were told by both the principal and the assistant principal that from now on they could not mention any student by name in any written communication, because if it could be construed in any way as negative, the schools would be sued, because a suit was brought against our middle school by the parents of a student who was expelled for good and justifiable reason, and their method of getting back to school for doing that was to go through correspondence and find anything they could to indicate that there was a quote-unquote negative attitude toward their child that influenced or created the problem that caused a child to be kicked out of school. This is ridiculous, ladies and gentlemen. When you are a teacher, one of the things you try to do is to communicate with parents and with your fellow teachers and with the administrators of your school so that everyone can be aware of what is happening with any student who is having any kind of difficulty whatsoever in either adjusting, learning, behavior, or any other aspect of their school time that could infringe their ability to get what the teachers are trying to give them, the academic skills and tools they need to function as a citizen of this great land. That means there's no available record. That means there is no real communication. That means that you are gagged. That means that the fear of being sued is one more barrier between you and doing what you love and do so well, teaching children. The topic for tonight, believing in teachers and not teachers' unions, is one of the things that has got to be a universal product. We have come as a nation to a point where the group is more important than the individual. Now, I'm not saying that everyone in this beautiful country feels that way. As a matter of fact, I'll go out on a limb and say that I believe that no more than 30% of the country feels that way. But because of the mainstream media, the progressives in charge of our government, the strident voices of minorities of any sort, and the beloved ACLU, we have been ground in groupthink and political correctness so that we can't recognize a hole in the ground by calling it a hole in the ground. We've got to call it a depression in the earth or a slight declivity in the terrestrial plane instead of it's a blasted hole. This kind of mealy-mouthed, wishy-washy, totally inconsequential chatter that is replacing dialogue and debate and questions and ideas is as sure to kill us as the victim mentality. And our kids are being fed this. The example of teachers being told that they had to cover their backs and not mention in any way who they were talking about when they were trying to communicate with each other, the administrators and the parents, on how to help a child. That's kind of like your doctor not being able to actually see you personally for fear he or she might do something or say something or look in some way that offends you, and he's got to do everything by remote. It's an absurd idea, but I understand the thinking in the school system and in the division. They, like the rest of us, do not want to be sued by anybody. But unfortunately, we live in a litigious society. It has become more and more that way, thanks to people like the ACLU, thanks to the politically correct ideology that comes from the top, thanks to the assumption that I got my feelings hurt, give me enough money and I'll forget about it mentality. And thanks to the idea that whenever we go somewhere to purchase something, from healthcare to a refrigerator, we expect whatever we get to be absolutely perfect, last until the end of time, and we don't have to learn anything about it before we buy it, because it's the duty and the requirement of anybody who is offering us anything to make sure that we don't do anything stupid with it once we bought it from them. I remember seeing years ago a clip on television of a gentleman who made ladders. You know, the things with the sides and the little steps that you climb up to clean your gutters on the fall, and that you buy down, set aside in your garage until you need it. Those other things. The gentleman's business had been making ladders for about 75 years. It was a family business, and it had come down from grandfather to father to son. And then it closed. because thanks to the safety concerns of our federal government, the cost of putting enough warning labels on the wooden ladder made it impossible to sell it cheaply enough so that people would buy it. The ladder company couldn't compete with the imported goods in the big box stores. Warning labels like, do not stand on ladder unless it is unfolded. Do not stand on top step ladder. Make sure ladder is even on the ground. Do not drop ladder on foot. It was absurd. An example, the McDonald's suit. The woman who put a hot cup of coffee between her legs and then sued the restaurant because she was driving, it spilled and burned her thighs. I'm sorry. That's not the restaurant's fault. Okay? If she wants to drink cold coffee so she can carry it between her legs, then she can take some from home and put it in the refrigerator until it's cool enough for her to put it there. The absurdity of the idea that we are all so incredibly stupid and inept that everyone has to warn us that we're not supposed to eat the peanut packing in a shipping crate because somebody will and they'll sue us because we didn't tell them it wasn't good for them. This mentality, this protective, risk-free life, perfect safety myth is what's being taught to our kids. Teachers are being told that they must produce equal outcomes for every child who goes through their classroom doors. They are expected to have a 100% pass rate. They are expected that every child will learn everything the state's standards say they're supposed to know by the end of the school year. And that child is supposed to be able to learn it at his own pace and still meet objective standards. And now, if the child is having trouble, you can't communicate with anybody and mention its name when you do so in order to try to find ways to help it. It is absolutely crazy, ladies and gentlemen. And like my friend Linda said, there will always be stupid people. And there'll be 1 in 300 million idiots who'll sue after they've done something stupid and win so that everybody else has to be protected from their stupidity because it's assumed by government that we all share it. Because we can't say that some people are brighter than others. It will hurt their self-esteem if somebody's told he's not as smart as somebody else. Well, guess what, folks? Most people who aren't as smart as somebody else don't need to be told. They figure it out. That's why I have so many kids in the STED section of collaborative classes as repeat offenders in my happy little in-school suspension jail. If we tell children the truth, they will trust us. If we lie to them, not only will they no longer trust us, they will no longer trust anyone, even those who are worthy of their trust. Children are not delicate hothouse flowers that need to be shielded and protected from the bumps and bruises that come with growing up. They are innocent, inexperienced, and avid to learn about all kinds of things, not necessarily the academic skills that teachers are trying to give them. You cannot encourage a child to learn if you continually lie to it and tell it that it doesn't have to put forth any effort to do so. You cannot give children the ability to be discriminating, oh yes, that dirty word, in their choices of acquaintances and companions and activities. If you tell them that everything is right, there is no bad behavior, only communication we don't understand. Parents, bless their hearts, have a much harder job now than they have had in the past in our country. Those parents who are concerned and care about their children, both as individuals and as future citizens, try to set and maintain rules and standards and ethics and morality to give their kids a touchstone, a rule book, if you will, that will help them avoid the pitfalls that would damage them permanently or even potentially kill them. And yet so many good parents who want to do this are absolutely terrified to actually do it for fear that Child Protective Services will come around if little Johnny gets smacked on the butt or little Susie is kept in from playing Little League sport after school because she tried to roast her little brother in the microwave. There is a line, ladies and gentlemen, between child abuse and child instruction. The line is pretty doggone clear. Abusive behavior cannot be tolerated. It needs to be found out and stopped, and the children who are receiving it need to be removed from the abusive environment and placed in an environment that will nurture them and not hurt them. But, unfortunately, because so many things are viewed as abusive, parents who discipline their children, or try to, if they make an enemy of any kind in the neighborhood, in the school system, in the local government, simply because they may have different political ideologies, it opens the door to a quick call to Child Protective Services and a careful, well, you need to check this. I didn't want to say anything, but I haven't seen little Johnny at Little League for 3 weeks, and I'm worried that he's being locked up in a closet and fed through a keyhole and beaten at night. And I know for a fact this happens because it happened to my youngest stepdaughter. A so-called friend of hers, who babysat her son when he was at work, was told that she didn't need to do that anymore because the child was going to be enrolled in a preschool daycare center. She was angry because she depended on the money that my stepdaughter gave her. She called Child Protective Services and accused my stepdaughter of physically, emotionally abusing her son, of being a drug addict, of being practically anything you think of. And my stepdaughter was visited by Child Protective Services, who basically did their best to intimidate her into giving up her child to prove that she wasn't abusive. Well, fortunately, my stepdaughter is quite a bright young woman, and so is my grandson. He was like 3 at the time. And the Child Protective Services worker wasn't stupid. And she saw a happy kid, a well-adjusted, hard-working mom who loved her children above all else, and basically backed out, said sorry to have bothered you, and nothing else happened. But how many people are so easily intimidated that when something like that happens to them, because we're given guilt for breakfast, that somehow or other, if we get sick, it's our fault. If our children aren't totally happy 100% of the time, that we've abused them, that we're too stupid to figure out not to put a hot cup of coffee in between our legs and drive with it that way, and start to believe it because that's the way they grew up. What do we have? We have state farms full of kids who should be with their own parents and get the occasional smack on the butt and be kept in instead of playing outside when they try to microwave their little brother. teachers also in our meeting were told that ever since the Penn State scandal, everybody who is any way employed by or in the school building while the children are there is considered to have the responsibility of being a first reporter. If they see, sense, think, opine that there is some sort of child sexual abuse going on, they are obligated to report it. They don't have to go anywhere except to Child Protective Services. They don't have to inform a superior. They don't have to go through the ICE office. They don't have to do anything at all except tell somebody what's going on. And the bright side of this was if they do, word has to come back from the top that somebody has done something about it. The dark side is that it opens the door to a false education that could ruin more than one life. I have a friend whose stepdaughter accused him of molesting her. It was a lie. It was proven to be a lie. She later recanted. But for over a year, he was looked at with suspicion. He was fired from his job. His neighbors wouldn't speak to him. And when he was vindicated, it was not too long ago, he was still having difficulty getting people to believe that he was never guilty of harming that child in any way, shape, or form. I believe that our children need to be protected from predators, ladies and gentlemen. A child molester, in my mind, is the most evil of human beings. Whether or not, quote unquote, he can't help it or she can't help it is immaterial. I can't help it is not a defense when you molest a child. Also understand that human beings can be and often are extremely venal, petty, and vindictive. And that opening the door to everybody spy on everybody else, everybody report everybody else, smacks way too much of the Hitler Youth. Yes, I believe that we must make sure that people who see something real are not too intimidated to say something about it. But we also have to be very, very careful about how these things are investigated. Because things can be misinterpreted, and people can be vicious. Our founding fathers understood the flawed nature of human beings. They understood that equality under the law was the only just way to run a nation. And they also understood that being alike as a synonym for equality under the law was nonsense. They knew that people very often do very wicked and cruel things. They knew that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's why they created the Constitution the way they did. That's why we didn't used to have public employee unions. Because they understood, and those of us who have studied them and what they created understand that when you hand over the reins of power to human beings, no matter what their title, what their office, what their function, you'd better have some way to take the reins away from them when they drive a buggy over the cliff. Or start lashing the person in the seat beside them, or mistreating the horses that are the motive power for that buggy. Our teachers are being held hostage, ladies and gentlemen, to this mindset that they are basically to be suspected, to be watched, to be overlooked, to be told that they can't say anything. They can't teach anything unless it's carefully watered down and vetted and politically correct and approved by the state. I have a clear understanding of the power that a teacher has. And it's a tremendous amount of power. And like all power, it can corrupt. And there are teachers who understand that power well enough to use it to damage the children who have been put into their hands. But I believe that the number of teachers like that is blessedly small. I believe that the vast majority of teachers would cut off their own hand before they would harm a child in any way. Many, 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 I'd say the majority of them have children of their own. They are not monsters, nor are they inept idiots. They are men and women who feel a calling to do something worthwhile for our future. They don't need to be, quote-unquote, represented by a union that's more interested in its political power than it is in the recipients of its members' actions and knowledge and skills. They need to be believed in by all of us, not as gods or goddesses or paragons or geniuses or the very next thing to the Savior, or so perfect that they can't be seen to have an adult beverage on a weekend for fear the children will think, gee, if Mrs. Zornenplatz does it, it's okay for me. I'll go out and buy a bottle of wine. I'll get my big brother to give it to me and my other 11-year-old friends go out behind the barn and get sozzled drunk because Mrs. Zornenplatz had a glass of wine with dinner at a restaurant in town. Part of the reasons that our schools are failing so badly is the incredibly, I don't know what to call it. I can't say fuzzy. I can't say blurred. The closest I can come is blind view of teaching and children in conjunction is what's held by the federal government. The federal government sees teaching and the children who receive it as all progressives see people as mechanical objects. Children is to them a focus group, like women or LGBTs or African Americans or Hispanics or Christians, or Mormons, or Jews, or Muslims. Not individuals, but a group, a voting block, a piece on a chessboard that is homogeneous, can be picked up entire, and placed somewhere else to make their hold on power more sure, or their desire for more advantageous to achieve. Children are not machines. Neither are teachers. They are people. They will have their good days and their bad days. They will have their stubborn spots. They will have their eager spots. They will have different skills and talents, different strengths and weaknesses. The job of parents and administrators is to look for the best in the teachers who deal with their children and who work for them. The ones who can make the classroom a place of curiosity and the joy that learning brings. Not their political ideology, not what they look like, not what church they go to, not their diversity, not their degree, not their prestigious college background, but are they any good at lighting that candle in a child's mind that will eventually illuminate the darkness of the world? That's how we measure a teacher. Not by unions demanding bloated retirement, not by liberal professors in colleges telling them that if everybody in their classroom doesn't learn equally well, it's their fault. Not by government setting mandates and common core curricula that teach revisionist history and set standards for everybody to achieve so that we can stand on a hill and say, look how government helped you. You're not allowed to build that. I loved one of Mitt Romney's speeches that I heard a clip from this week. It was one from one of his campaign stops a while back after the "you didn't build that" comment from Barack Obama in Charlottesville or wherever he was. I hate to think that he did it in Virginia, but what the heck. Anyhow, Governor Romney illustrated the idiocy of Obama's redaction that, well, you know, I didn't mean that. I just meant that the government to provide the roads. Governor Romney said, well, when your child works hard and makes honor roll and come home with that report card, you know the bus driver takes him to school every day, but you don't compliment the bus driver for the honor roll. It's the same failed philosophy. And it's so very true. Our kids are being told that nothing is ever their fault. It's always somebody else's. And they're entitled to get back at that person who put an artificial barrier in the way of their becoming perfect at something or other. I've told you before about an African-American woman who was angry because her son's behavior in class caused him to wind up with disciplinary measures at least 5 times a month, saying as she huffily walked out of the principal's office with her son, "That's all right, they just don't want you to succeed because you're black." When the child was an arrogant, congenital liar who treated his teachers as if they were cattle in a field, and he was shoving them out of the way so he could get where he wanted to go. If we teach our kids things like that, if we tell them that it's always somebody else's fault that they didn't get an A, or they're not elected student class president, or they're not the quarterback on the football team, or they didn't win the relay race, what kind of an adult citizen will that child become? Functioning? I doubt it. Productive? I doubt it. Independent? No way. Self-reliant? Not in a million years. Ethical? I don't think so. Interested in achievement for its own sake? Uh-uh. They would rather fail so they could blame somebody, sue them, and get rich enough that they didn't have to try anything ever again. It makes me angry, ladies and gentlemen. I don't like to be angry. I know many of you listening out there probably think, boy, that woman is a real witch. She must be ranting and raving at everybody all the time. Strangely enough, I'm not. Usually I'm very happy and very upbeat, and I enjoy what I do. I like interacting with people. I like to have a pleasant thought in my mind when I get in the car to go to work in the morning. When I'm in a grocery store or driving down the street or walking through a park, my first impulse is to smile at people because I'm genuinely happy to be there and I'm hoping they are too. But when I see our name and our children being pushed down a road that take them to the back end of nowhere, I do get angry. I can't smile and be politically correct and say, oh, well, that's just different. No, it's not just different. It's wicked, it's wrong, and it's dangerous. And it will not change unless we change it. I have hopes that this fall we will have a change in the highest office in the land. Not because I'm a Republican or a Democrat or even a Libertarian, although I'm closer to the last one than I am the other two, but because I'm an American. And I believe in the things that so many of the speakers last night at the Republican convention said. So many of them. Mia Love, the African-American woman who is mayor of a town in Arizona. Susana Martinez, the first female Hispanic governor of any state in the nation, governor of the state of New Mexico. Our own Governor Bob McDonnell here in Virginia. Condoleezza Rice, former Secretary of State. Chris Christie, Governor of New Jersey. Paul Ryan, the grandson of immigrants, whose mother had to go out and go to work at the death of her husband at 50, and whom he honored last night with a real tear in his eye as his role model. These people, if they do what their life experience has apparently taught them to do, when they are in positions of power, our country can heal and can prosper and can return to the ideals our founding fathers put into it, along with their blood, as well as their sweat and their tears. Got a phone call here, ladies and gentlemen. Let's see who's on the line. Hello there.
Hi, Miss Terry. Can you hear me?
I sure can, Miss Linda. How's it going, honey?
It's hot and humid, but we're surviving. It's funny when you talk about the RNC speeches. There were many good points to many of the speeches, and I love the signs that, because, you know, when you talked about the president, Pantload, who had, I think his dooming line was, you didn't build that. I think he's wishing it, that never came out of his dingbat mouth, but anyway, it did. And then they had the signs that say, the kids are having signs going, yes, we can change it, instead of the old, yes, we can. They did that. And then everybody has, we built it. We all over the place. It's kind of on the floor, you know, the delegates and the.
He has got to be cringing and writhing every time he hears that slogan for the campaign because it came from his mouth. He can't argue it away.
Take it
he
back.
Can't pretty it up. Even in the context that he swears up and down, he meant it still reeks.
It doesn't fly. Yeah, and everybody knows it. He's got businessmen all over this country. Just oh God! I mean, I was walking door to door, and I was just kind of talking about the council people that I want to elect this go around in November for Oceanside. And this guy, first guy I talked to, out in his driveway, and I handed him the information, and he said, oh yeah, we like Mayor Jim Wood and the rest of these folks, and he says, and no on Obama, and I said, absolutely, you know, it was nice to hear at least, you know, one person out of my several that I got to, but some of the, I don't know if you heard the comments, I believe, after the first evening when Ann Romney spoke, and that idiot, Juan Williams.
I heard.
The corporate wife, and that obviously that everything in life to this guy is about money and wealth.
And I have to give a hat tip
to Glenn Beck, because Glenn Beck pointed out, I think she would gladly trade every dime for good health, don't you? I mean, what's wrong with this clown? I just had to get that in, because that man, I swear, I don't know how he must borrow his brain cells from China, because, like the Fed Reserve does, because that poor thing, I can't believe this guy. But you talked about the founders. You talked about the founders and what they knew to be true, because they had to do this firsthand. You and I have never been under that bad of tyranny, although we're approaching it at this moment.
Correct.
You know what I mean? So we've taken a lot for granted, because we didn't know. Those of you in previous times before I started gathering all this information are well versed in history, so you got an idea. And now I have a great idea. But it is fragile, and it's got to be protected. And everything that these people are doing with this federal government, and I believe the federal government should keep their rat hands off education entirely. It should be up to the states and the local communities, because everything they touch turns to merit a heartbeat every single time.
Exactly. Every time.
It's the truth.
And one of the biggest, I've said this before, and, you know, Ron, bless his heart, agrees with me. One of the worst mistakes that we ever did as a nation, aside from electing Woodrow Wilson, was putting in the 17th Amendment that creates direct election of senators.
That would be one of my first to want to go, yes.
That one and the income tax. I am a fair tax or flat tax proponent. Purely and simply, and I see this in our school systems, Linda. When people think something's free, okay? They don't take care of it, because I can just go out and beg for a new one. If you don't have skin in the game, if you haven't purchased whatever it is through the actually writing the cut and pick a check, you don't think of it as something that you are paying for. The number of the idea that it's a free public education is absurd. It's not free. It doesn't require a tuition from the parents, but they already pay the tuition when they buy anything or use their telephone. Even if, like the most of the people in the country, they don't pay any income taxes, they still pay taxes not only upfront when they purchase goods and services, but the hidden taxes that are passed on through them with the incredibly ridiculous corporate tax rate we've got.
Absolutely. No, you're exactly right. There's nothing free about any of this stuff. Because look at the price we're paying. I mean, not just in dollars, Terry, but you know, the price of the children's lack of education and lack of reading skills. It's abhorrent. I mean, this is
Paul
the
Ryan,
bigger crime than the money.
Paul Ryan last night was absolutely brilliant when he said, living in our future where you live in a country where everything's free but us.
That was perfect.
Absolutely magnificent. I sat here
that
and applauded him.
That was to be etched in stone.
Yes, because that's where we are headed. And doggone it, Linda, I've been watching our schools teach this to our kids for 35 years now. It wasn't as blatant when I first got involved in education as a private tutor, but it began to be while I was doing that.
Right.
The parents who went to the schools and threatened to sue them if they didn't provide accommodation for their learning disabled kid. And the schools buckled, and we got the Americans with Disabilities Act expanded to include, one of my eyelashes isn't straight, so I'm disabled. And it's almost that bad. It's insanity. It is really insanity. And I know there are lots of folks out there listening, and previous listeners and so on, who are thinking, what an evil, nasty, wicked old lady who doesn't want to help the poor little darlings who can't learn. Yes, I do, but I don't want to help them into even more feeble-mindedness, which is what schools are doing now. Yeah. I mean, they've got enough of a hard row to hoe. Do we have to add more stupidity on top of what they're already born with?
I know. It's craziness. I mean, because you touched on that, as human beings, we are fallible, of course. There's always going to be stupid people out there, like the one in 300 million who puts the coffee between one's lap or whatever and, you know, drives around. I mean,
yeah, it gets third-degree burns on her thighs.
There's no common sense in that poor person's little head. But, you know, so then everybody goes off the rails and they swing the pendulum and say, oh, my God, we've got to protect. It's the same with the seatbelts. It's the same with the kids' child seats. I mean, how did we survive? Good Lord.
I know.
Without all, I mean, come on. And you know, it's this is about control, money, and power. You know that's what it is.
Of course it is. They do not give a rat's backside
behind
about the safety of anybody. What they care about is their ability to control industry and control behavior. And if they can do that, they can, happy progressives, regulate us up to the...
our eyeballs.
Yeah, to the point where the new gods, the Gotterdammerung happens, the gods are gone, and they are in the top spot, and we are the adoring worshipers, which is exactly what they were. If you've ever read, or looked at, or heard, or watched the Ring Cycle operas, you'll understand why Hitler loved them so. But people don't know about things like that now. Our kids don't get any information about some of the classic things, a classical education like I talked about last week. They laugh at you if you tried to give a kid that. What do I need to know about the Wagner operas, for heaven's sake? You know, I don't want to put them on my iPod.
I know.
If you look at just the difference in the mindset, take a look at any piece by Mozart or Bach. Look at the precision, the harmonics, the understanding of how the chromatic scales blended, how the melody was counterpoint to the background, the mathematical preciseness and the order and the beauty of classical music. And then listen to rap, verbal vomit with a beat. Is it any wonder these kids are totally incapable of thinking beyond da-da, 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 da-da?
No. Well, this is just that culture shift from probably the 50s and 60s, and I do believe that there was a lot of nefarious thought put behind all of this. I really do. I don't put anything past these philosopher kings, as you will.
Neither do I, hon. I just don't. You know, like I said at the beginning of the show, what Chris Christie said Tuesday night, we don't believe in teachers' unions, we believe in teachers. If that were the prevailing attitude of the vast majority of people in this country, and if they weren't being trolled both directly and subliminally, the teachers are either stupid, abusive, venal, or uncaring. And they are being told this.
Right.
It comes across in everything that we talk about, everything government talks about education. Throw more money at it, you know. Throw more money at it. Throw more money at it, and we'll fix it. My husband was a big advocate of Head Start when it came out in the late 60s. He used to be a lot more liberal than he is now, but he was never that idiotic. He hung with the hippies because they had the best drugs. But anyhow, he believed that if you took a child who was malnourished and had no exposure to learning and gave them the opportunity to eat well, which was part of Head Start, they fed breakfast and lunch, and gave them the pre-kindergarten kind of stuff that most kids from higher income brackets got, singing the ABC song or helping them learn how to color in the line, that they too could achieve. But after the first 10 years, when everything showed there was no discernible difference in student performance, once they got into second grade, somebody should have figured out that this really isn't doing any good at all. It's just government babysitting.
Right.
Don't call it school. Call it daycare.
Well,
but we're
that's
still
what
funding
it, is.
It. We're still funding it. And oh my God, did you hear the incredible roar of outrage when it was suggested that it be terminated?
Oh, you
know, everybody was up in arms. Oh, we can't do that. We hate poor people. Oh my God. And that idiot newsman who on open mic said the Republican, Mitt Romney was having a party while African-American people were drowning. Of all of
they fired him.
Absurd,
they fired him.
I know they did. And that other idiot who construed the comment about Obama is preparing for the PGA Tour, not leadership, as somehow or other equating him with Tiger Woods' sexual practices. Now, you've got to be
God.
Oh, yeah, it's on the Blaze. Read the article. I swear, you have got to be reaching into a pit that is beyond human understanding to come up with that analogy.
Well, you know what, Terry? The lamestream media at this point, you know, they're tanking. They're so desperate. They are so disgusting. It's funny now because, you know, with our internet, thank God we still have some freedoms left with it. We don't need them anymore. And you know what? They know it. And I think that's why they're swarming like the cockroaches that they are.
They are, because
you get enough,
they know.
You get enough raid camp, they start squirming.
The other, they know darn well that the only hope they have to be subsidized and kept as too big to fail was the progressives. Republicans aren't. They won't button them up and prop them up because they're losing viewership. They're losing income because people aren't watching their shows. It's a wonder they have any advertisers at all for anything besides Dancing with the Stars or America's Got Talent.
Do you know what? Exactly. That's the only ones the only reason I watch any of the you know, alphabet soup stations. And I know another hat tip to Glenn. He said, "Oh, just think about all those buildings in New York that are going to be empty soon for weeks."
Well, maybe the government can put them along with all of the empty government buildings that they won't sell. And cut back on some of the parties in Hawaii for the people who would take care of those things. It's absurd. It's the power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. I cannot get inside the brain of our current president. Believe me, I don't want to go in there. It's kind of like, you know, walking into a garbage dump because you lost your wedding ring and you got to root for it. And you know damn good not in that dump.
I also saw 2016. And it was very well done. Dinesh is probably one of the smartest people on the planet. He's really
brilliant.
You know,
man.
he's so cute. You just want to put him on your mantle, you know. I mean,
I know. I've seen him on interviews. And I was listening when he was talking about George Obama, Bucksburg, calling him, Dinesh D'Souza, for help when his son
saw that clip.
Was ill.
Oh, my God.
And learning about the other brother, who's a physicist in China, and Barack telling him, "Why aren't you at Kenya?" "Well, what the heck am I going to do in Kenya?" And then Barack happily refusing to see him again because he didn't buy into the anti-colonialist Marxist rhetoric that Barack grew up in. I can't get in that man's head. The only reason I would want to is to find out whether or not he truly believes all of this, or whether he's just a much better actor than I think he is.
I honestly think in his core believes that this is what he's supposed to do, and that this is the right thing. And I believe I do believe that it's very vindictive on his part, because he does not like us. He does not like what we have, and he wants to tear it down like those huts in the movie in Kenya. He wants this place to look like. Well, I got news for him. I don't want to live in North Korea or any place like Kenya or Somalia or Rwanda
or Cuba, or neither do
Idiot.
I.
No.
I like my preference. I love my preference.
I'm about 40, 50 miles north of Tijuana. I've been to Tijuana.
Exactly. I know exactly what you mean. Well, part of the problem that so many people in this country have, Linda, is there are lots of causes, and I could list about 50 different factors that contribute to the mentality we've got right now. But I tend to agree with Jefferson. Now, I don't expect us to return to a happy agrarian economy. The world won't allow us to. But his understanding that when you pile people together in cities, you kill independence is quite correct. Because if you've ever hung around with people who have spent their entire life in a big city, they are totally inept at doing anything for themselves.
Right. Oh, exactly.
Because,
and now it's worse with my way. Oh, my Lord. They would starve to death.
Because it's somebody else's job to do that. They're supposed to, their job is to get on the subway or the bus or in the cab, go and do their, you know, $150,000 job, come back to their apartment where the maids cleaned it, the supers made sure the electricity's on, the elevator's clean,
yep.
the lobby is pristine, the traffic flows smoothly, the sidewalks are, yeah, they have no responsibility at all because they have no skin in the game. There's
Correct.
Always somebody there to fix it. Well, where I live, if my electricity goes out, okay, I've got to wait because I'm in a rural county in a fairly mm-hmm. low population area, so I'm not first on the list to get my lights back on. So I
right.
have a cooler. I keep extra ice. I have a friend across the street who has generators so I can charge my phone there, and she has no problem with me doing that. We help each other. If I
Absolutely.
Can't fix something, David probably can, and if he can't, we've got friends all around the neighborhood who have expertise that we lack.
Yep.
Because we can't just pick up a phone and say, hey, come out and fix this, or come up and fix this. You know, we can't do that. But
Absolutely.
Rural people also know, even if they're not farmers themselves, they know that putting a seed in the ground and then throwing money at it and telling it, grow, damn it, is not going to do a thing.
The washing machine. I love it. Exactly. I know.
Can't
As
you know, honey, I was born to be a teacher. I can't help it. I've tried to be other things, and I always wind up teaching somebody something anyway. And
right.
I believe that if I can't use actual visuals, I've got to use a visual image. I have to use imagery that will touch somebody else, that will give them a picture that makes sense to them.
To them.
And
right.
Yeah, to them. And if you have ever tended a house plant or planted a seed for your kid to grow up, a potato for science class, you
mm-hmm.
know that you can't make a potato grow any faster than it wants to, no matter how much you talk to it or how many rules you run in the pot. You just can't do it.
I know. See, this is that cog in the wheel thing you're talking about, that they look at everything mm-hmm. in mechanical terms. Or
yes.
what I've been reading with Hayek is the central planning idea of
yes.
socialism and social justice, which is evil, and it always, always leads to totalitarianism, which because
yes,
power corrupts, absolutely. So here we are.
It yeah, sucks. And it
but,
happens every time.
Right.
That's why liberalism, progressivism meets the clinical definition of insanity, because they keep doing the same thing over and over in exactly the same way and expect different results every cotton pick in time.
Yeah,
that's insanity.
Why Savage Michael Savage wrote, I think one of his first political books was Liberalism is a Mental Disorder.
It really is, because the underlying desire, all the way back to Marx and Kant and Engels and the rest of them, is to
mm-hmm.
redesign humanity through governmental force.
Right.
If we just force them, they'll turn out to be nice people. Well, I have never yet found it possible to force anybody to be sincerely, truly nice. Polite, yes, until your back is turned, and then they go right back to being the nasty little jerk they were before.
Well, yeah, every human is capable of doing very great harm to one another. I mean, that's why
we are.
Hopefully the rule of law, and we have the Ten Commandments, and if
mm-hmm.
one believes in the higher than oneself, which I believe in Christ, but that's just me, you know, I'm not going to do those things very readily if I truly believe that, that I will be held accountable.
One of the reasons that progressives have got to denigrate religion of any kind. There
sure.
can't be God, because God competes with government. You cannot have anybody to look to except government. God
you know,
is a no-no.
Between, you know, one of the differences between, besides that God doesn't have a certificate either, President Obama and God is, God doesn't think he's the president of the United States.
God's smarter than that. He doesn't want to be the president of the United States.
But B.O. thinks he's God. Stupid ass.
Oh, yes.
I get mad at him.
Progressives do. I ran into this, as I've said before, when I was doing my master's in transpersonal psychology. a lot of the transpersonal psychologists, who are all a little bit strange anyway, obviously, you know me, so you know that, they see man evolving spiritually to position where he will understand God. That's an oxymoron. But, you know, they're eternally hopeful people, and they're really very nice, and kind of like Unitarians, an angry, gentle people, as one of their hymn puts. They're always looking. They'd be really disappointed if they actually found something, because all the fun of looking would be over with. They do have a couple of clear insights that we do have a spiritual nature, and that spiritual nature is as unique as we are, and that we will seek and find that which fulfills our spiritual nature.
Right.
We'll continue to look until we find it. And what if you believe, as you and I do, that there is one overarching being, state, creator of love? Eventually you'll get there. No matter which donkey you ride up the mountain, everybody's heading for the same mountaintop. The donkey doesn't matter. It's the idea that you're trying to climb the mountain. And if you truly are trying to climb the mountain, and you truly wish to become a part of that total love, that total acceptance, you will eventually find the right path. Because you can't get there, and you can't envision that if you have a petty, small heart. If you want to remain the Grinch, you'll remain the Grinch.
Exactly. I did like Christy's speech. I mean, there was, if you go to each one of the speakers, there were parts that I loved about each of them, and then there were parts that kind of, you know, raised an eyebrow here and there.
As with any politician.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even Condi Rice, who is absolutely brilliant, as you know, because I do believe she speaks and reads and writes Russian. But
and the classical piece.
Oh, God. She's extremely well-bred and well-educated, you know, in the sense of knowledge. Maybe she didn't come from riches, but that's no big deal. You know, you can get that. If, you, like you said, I love your the thing you were going to put, like a bumper sticker slogan. You are not entitled to anything, but you have the opportunity and the freedom to go out and have everything.
Yep.
If you do it yourself, and that's why people do what they do. I mean, how old was Colonel Sanders when he started at 65 years old. I mean, come on. Oh, I will... You know, there's no talking to people like Obama, because he's never going to get... The guy is so cloistered in this ideology, it's impossible. You can't crack that shell, I don't believe.
He's never had a real job in his life until now.
Yeah.
Everybody fails on their first job. I love
that
one.
That was great. Ryan nailed the whole. I mean, it's going to be great tonight, I hope. But
there were so many good speakers. I was absolutely thrilled with Mia Love, and Susana Martinez was absolutely priceless. I was able to protect myself when I guarded the bingo hall. I had a .357 Magnum, and yes, the gun weighed more than I did. And of course, David sitting in the background says, "Well, it doesn't now, honey." He would. But she was.
Yeah, he was
terrific. Condi Rice. Everybody. I didn't get to hear most of Luis Fortuno's speech because they were talking over it. And I really liked that man, the governor of Puerto Rico. I saw an interview with him on one of the Fox shows. He is one smart businessman. And I love the fact that they showed that it can be done. The number of governors turned around failing states was priceless.
The fact that they did not get their recall of Scott Walker. Just beautiful. I mean, this is an indication, I believe, and I don't believe these polls that are out there. I think he's going to get slaughtered. That's what I think. I do.
I devoutly hope so. You know, the other thing with having all those Republican governors on every doggone one of them almost had a rival party controlled legislature. But they were able to really be bipartisan instead of the fake bipartisanship of the current inhabitant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. His idea of bipartisan is you can sit at the table with all of us good guys and do what we tell you. That's bipartisanship for him.
And he even said that the Republicans have to sit in the back of the bus. That's what he said.
Yes, he did. Because he's not willing to see anything except that shining vision of his father's anti-colonialist and his mother's Marxist ideology. He can't get outside of that. He can't because he's never experienced what it means to be an ordinary American. He has never lived in this nation as an ordinary citizen. Never.
No,
even when he lived in Hawaii. Hawaii didn't become a state until the late 1950s.
Right. And they are very anti-colonial. They're the most progressive. If you think Connecticut, New York, and California are bad, oh my God. Hawaii, that's like, that's old Soviet.
They still remember what we did to Queen Liliuokalani and what we did to Kamehameha, which was dirty pool all the way across.
Right.
Because there wasn't
very progressive there.
It was If I'd been treated by us the way Hawaii was, I think I'd be anti-colonialist too. But the perception that our desire to try to be an example and to try to help people take a shot at running their own countries isn't colonialism. But they want to see it that way. Because any interference by anybody, unless somebody who agrees with the god-awful way they're running things already, is a colonialist. They want to take it. It's kind of like the line from The King and I, where the king is singing about, how hard it is to be a king. And he talks about, if allies are strong with power to protect me, might not protect me out of all I own. And quite often they do. And I understand that. I understand that feeling. But we don't need someone to guide this entire nation with that narrow a view of what this nation is.
Of course. I know. That's why everybody who can't stand him now, because we are Americans and we do have some recollection of our history and our founding, et cetera, and our principles, values, all traditions, et cetera. It's hard for us to understand, a lot of people to understand this guy, but that's because he feels foreign to us because he is. This guy's like, he's as alien as a Martian to me. I mean,
He is. He really is. We are being told from the highest elected representative that we have that we should be ashamed of our nation. Well, damn it, I'm not ashamed of my nation. I am well aware that many horrible things were done in the name of the United States of America. But doggone it, we're not still doing them.
Exactly. Oh, they'll just never let it go.
I can go to the market and buy myself a nice little slave to do my housework for me. And I can go to an Indian and take his land. I mean, we don't need to do that anymore.
Terry, they're never going to let this stuff go because that's all they've got. I mean, they got
to. Because they can't, to energize a Democratic base, you have to make them angry and victims because nobody else in their right mind who has any degree of success would follow this ideology. Because once you start to be successful, you begin to say, wait a minute now. I worked for this. Why should I give it to him? He's not doing anything.
You got that right. No, they get it. After high school kids get their first job and they go, hey, wait a minute. What's this taxation nonsense?
Well, today it was funny. I was at the dentist getting ready. I'm going in for oral surgery on Friday the 14th, having my teeth pulled and dentist put. But anyhow, I was doing at the dentist's office today, and he was doing the preliminary cast and so on and so forth. And as I was sitting with all this muck in my mouth, he was saying that he had mentioned that I wanted Fox News on a little television above the dentist chair and that I was a conservative in Weymouthburg. Well, God forbid. But anyhow, he was very nice. And he was saying he'd just gotten an email, and I know you've gotten it, the one about the gentleman who's working in his yard and his liberal neighbors and their little girl come up And he asks her what she wants to be, and she says president, and he says why, and she says, because that way I can make sure that homeless people have a place to live and food and money. And he said, well, you don't have to wait till you're president for that. You come over here and help me with the yard work, and I'll give you $50. And you can go down the street to where the homeless man hangs around the mall, and you can give it to him. And he kind of thought for a while, and she said, well, how come he can come here and do it, and then you can give him the $50? And the gentleman said, congratulations, honey, you're a Republican. And his neighbors won't speak to him now.
Awesome.
That is pretty much the way it is. That if you are constantly being told that everybody is keeping you from being successful because they hate you, and the only way you're going to be successful is to take from them what they have, mm-hmm. and you hear no other way,
nothing.
You see no other way, what are you going to believe?
Start to believe it,
As I have said, it will take people like Mia Love, Alan West, Condi Rice, the Democratic Black Caucus member who is now a Republican. They're the ones who have to going to go into the ghettos and say, look, people, look at me. Okay? Look what I did, and you can too.
Right.
It come from white political leaders. Because the mentality is all white people hate black people no matter what. And if they're nice to you, it's only because they want to cheat you into doing the work for free. It's going to take black conservatives, African-American conservatives, to be the role models and not the like of Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton.
Yeah.
Those men are vultures. They are not role models.
They're sorry excuses for people, rather than, that doesn't matter what color they are. They're just panderers. But anyway, I'm going to let you wind it up, and thanks so much for taking my call, and God bless, and we're praying for you, and you can do your rundown of the shows, and thank you, Terry, for all you do.
Oh, you're more than welcome, Linda, and God bless you, my little hero out there in California. Thanks so
much
for calling in, honey. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and if you talk to Yo, give her my love, won't you?
Okay, I will.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, sweetie. Ladies and gentlemen, we only have a little bit of time left tonight, and I hope those of you out there listening have enjoyed this evening's show. I hope you'll join us here on Blog Talk Radio for the other shows that are brought to you by www.patriotfamily. Every Sunday, there's Fed Up Frank. Every Monday, Constitution Hour with Ron Golden. Tuesdays, Patriot Family Chat with Hollis and Bill. On Wednesdays, my caller tonight, the lovely Linda Sills with Right from the Left Coast. And, of course, Patriot Education every Thursday at 7. And on Friday, Foreclosure Help with our experts in the real estate market. And on Saturdays, Breaking the Illusion with Magic Frank. Every one of the folks who do the radio shows here on Blog Talk for Patriot Families believe in this nation. We believe that America is exceptional, not because we're perfect, but because we always try to do things better. We don't sit back and say, everything's fine, we don't have to improve. We always try to make things better. And with luck, ladies and gentlemen, we can do that this fall. No matter who you vote for, register and vote. This is the greatest privilege you will ever have. Not only is it your right, it is your duty. Because we get the government we deserve. If we don't pay attention, if we don't examine the people we choose to represent us, we will get exactly what we deserve. And I believe that this nation deserves a lot better than what we have now. If you don't, that's fine, because this is a free country. You have the right and the duty to choose who makes your laws and who carries out and executes them. If you give up that right because you're bored, pathetic, you think nobody's any good, then don't complain when government does something you don't like or you get personally hurt. I want to wish you all a lovely evening, and I ask you, those of you listening, to please say a prayer for our friend Yo, who's quite ill, and we miss her desperately. She's an asset to this world. She's an asset to Patriot Families. She's an asset to this beautiful nation we call home. and my heart goes out to her, and you can bet she will be in my prayers at all times. Have a great evening, ladies and gentlemen, and come back, listen in, call us, join us in the chat room next Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time for Patriot Education. Between now and then, think of some ideas for topics you'd like to hear on this show or any of our others. Get in touch with our hosts and hostesses on Patriot Families. Tell us what you'd like to hear about. We believe that you and your opinions and ideas matter because you are the nation. Good night, everyone, and thanks again for listening this evening.